This week, the Working Tools podcast is on the road at the Conference of Grandmasters of North America, being held right here in Seattle, Washington. So our format's a little different. We're going to have a series of short interviews with the attendees. We hope you enjoy.
Ladies and gentlemen, brethren all, welcome to the Working Tools podcast, a casual conversation around Freemasonry. First, it's important to note that our thoughts and opinions are our own and do not reflect those of our Grand Lodge or respective craft or concordant bodies. Please connect with us and ask questions via our website at theworkingtoolspodcast.com.
So with continuing our interviews on day three of the Conference of Grandmasters here in Seattle, we have managed to grab a brother from North Dakota. Sir, would you please introduce yourself?
My name is Fred Kitko. I'm the Senior Grand Warden and the Grand Lecturer for the Grand Lodge North Dakota.
I have a question already. What does the Grand Lecturer do in North Dakota? Is it a...
Good question. We do have nine districts, and each district... is invited to put on a lodge of instruction, and that's where the Grand Lodge would come in. Grand Lecturer, if the Grand Master is available, he will come too. And we just lecture on certain topics. Sometimes it's things the Grand Lodge is interested in passing along, and sometimes we just ask the district, what do you want? You know, what's a weakness in your district that, or an interest in your district that would want to be addressed? And then also during our annual communication, we have something called a Masonic College that goes on for part of the afternoon, and that's the Grand Lecturer as well that puts on that.
So it's sort of a educational role.
Yeah, yep. So this will be my last year because tradition prevailing, you know, if I get elected to deputy, then one, there won't be enough time to do justice to both, and it's also time just to let someone else in, because it's it's supposed to be a lifetime position. So let another brother who's got other strengths get in there and do stuff that I haven't thought of. So
absolutely. So to get back to the topic at hand, is this your first time to the Conference of Grandmasters?
Third time.
It was in South Dakota a few years ago, wasn't it? Or was that North Dakota?
Nebraska. It was in Nebraska. Anyway.
Yeah, I think it was North Dakota, but that was before my time on the line. My first time was down in Topeka, Kansas. I think it was Topeka. It could have been the Midwest Conference, I'm not sure. And that was tied into the Midwest Conference on Education. So that could have been the Midwest Conference.
I just remember the Grand Line coming back and complaining about why are we having this in North Dakota in February?
You know what? Yeah, no.
Why don't we either choose a different month or a different place, one or the other.
Yeah, this the last year, where was that last year? It was really my first time going and participating as part of the Grand Line. So this is my second.
And how are you? Are you gaining anything from this? Are you enjoying it, or is it?
Oh yeah. Well, you always enjoy meeting brothers that we haven't seen in a whole year, but then there's other folks that you're just meeting for the first time. So you get to hear what's alike, you know, and what's different, and you get into different discussions. And sometimes they agree with you, and sometimes they don't, and vice versa, you know. But you can have those discussions. And it's very interesting, you know, and especially like with population, you come from, or you talk to brothers from states with a lot of Masons, you know, and they come from the, well, this should be easy to do. And then when they hear how many brothers you have in your state, you know, and that you're spread apart, you know, from one side to the other by 5 or 6 hours, they're like, oh, that kind of would be hard to do, you know, so it's good to come and listen to folks. The three things that is my takeaway, I guess, is George Sagers, who is just retired as the executive director of the George Washington Masonic Memorial. He's a North Dakota boy, so he comes to our annual communications. And so one time after our session, he was relaxing outside of his hotel room, and we were having a conversation, and he says, you know, Masonry, we don't need 10-point plans. We don't need 15-point plans. He says, three things is all a lodge needs to be healthy. Ritual, Masonic fellowship, and Masonic education. And that's it. And what was interesting, especially this time, is whether brothers got up in small groups or in the general session and they put up 4 points or 6 points or whatever, those three things are always in there somewhere. So I thought that very affirming, you know, and that, one, I knew George was right, you know, but also affirming to me because there's a lot of guys in Masonry listen to the MRC, you know, that are thinking that you got to go back to the basics and it's not that hard, but we have to kind of break the cycle of trying to make things so complicated.
For sure. How many Masons are there roughly in North Dakota?
I checked before I got here to the conference, and we had, I think it was like 24, so about a little over 2,400 Masons. So
I'm going to guess as a percentage of the population, that's probably more than we have in Washington on a per capita basis.
Yeah,
I think I don't know the numbers off the top of my head, but that would be my guess.
Yeah, I think we have 700, maybe 750,000 in the state. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong, but that's about where it's at.
Now I want to look it up. I will restrain myself.
I know. Yeah, you're trained with our smartphones to go, you have a thought and you quick go look it up.
Exactly. I'm sorry to go back. You said earlier you had the three things. I just made the connection in my head. You said there were three things that you'd taken away.
Yep.
And those were the Masonic education. I thought that was one of the three things. Those
are yeah,
the,
no, yeah.
The, I'm with you now. Sorry.
Yeah, I didn't phrase it quite well, but yeah, the three things that, you know, that George Sagers told me, you know, that I'm listening to it in small groups and in big groups over and over and over. Those three things always seem to be included in whatever list that people come up with.
I was going to say, I think in Washington we have six things on our list, but those are certainly three of them.
Six supports, yeah, for sure.
And that's in business too. That seems to be the trend right now because. In my college, I work for University of North Dakota in the aviation department, and when we had our strategic planning earlier this spring, the strategic planning was narrowed down to 5 points, 5 areas that needed to focus on. And the explanation from the administration is, you know, we're done doing 15 points and 20 points, and he says, 5 is doable, you know, and at the end of the year, you can... Why did we get this done good and this done not? He says, when you have 20 of them, they're all not going to be, even if you have people really working hard, you're not going to get to all of them.
So how in the world did you become junior grand warden? what brought you to that stage? Was there kind of a natural progression? Oh, yeah.
It was a bit accusatory there.
Yeah.
No. How did you make, you know, of course, we would like to know, too, how you came to Masonry, but what's that progression like? How long have you been a Mason? Maybe that is a good place to start.
I was raised in 2012. I thought about Masonry a lot in my 20s, but then after you graduate and stuff and you got other things on your mind and whatnot, never thought about it. I grew up in New England, and every time we would go, you know, to the village square, you know, there was the Masonic Lodge. Big pillars and things there. Then a buddy came up and was camping in his RV, and we were having a little campfire outside and talking, and he said, you know, I always thought about being a Mason. I go, yeah, I did too. And of course, we had Wi-Fi in the campground, so we looked her up, and we didn't know how much it would cost. We thought, oh, I hope it fits in the budget.
Right.
You know, and unfortunately, the costs are very low, and sometimes they're too low, you know.
We definitely like to put the free in Freemasonry.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm in the Lions Club, and there were a few guys in the Lions Club that were Masons. So met with them and talked to them. They gave me a petition. And then I find out there's a lot more guys that I knew that were there. Because I liked ritual, and I was encouraged to learn little bits of ritual at a time till I got comfortable with it, I was able to, well, I subbed in a lot of different positions, and then our senior deacon had shift work. So the master says, do you want to fill in for senior deacon when the brother can't be there? And I'm like, sure. So I did. And it just so happened to work out that there was an opening. Some plans were laid waste, and they go, could you be senior deacon this year? I'm like, sure. So I was lucky or unlucky that within a couple years of being in masonry, I was at senior deacon already. One of my brothers from a lodge down the road from us, he got on the line. And in North Dakota, it's you just get elected as junior grand warden. You don't really start out like in a steward spot or anything. Those are appointed anyway. But the somewhere you really don't get elected junior grand warden. There are exceptions, but unless you've been on a committee for a little bit, or you've done some other grand line work, or something like that. So. I got elected to Policy General Purposes Committee. One of the guys that got on the line, when he got to be Grand Master, he knew my interest in ritual and Masonic education. So he's like, do you want to be my Grand Lecturer this year? I'm like, okay. You know, and that was the result of me being on my deck enjoying my evening, and I find these, you know, little tidbits online or the Grand Lodge of Massachusetts Ben Franklin videos. Mm-hmm. And I'd send it off to him, and 5 minutes later he'd call up, and that led to him saying, hey, do you want to be Grand Lecturer? So I did. So I got to learn how Grand Lodge works and acquainted myself to the brothers that way, and the brothers across the state when I was doing Grand Lecturer stuff. And then I just was, I didn't get into this to be Grand Master, you know, to be honest with you. I just liked doing the education bit and the meeting the brothers across state, and then I learned stuff too, because every time I had to research things and found out something different, or found out I was wrong in my interpretation, you know, from earlier.
Wrong, or never wrong.
Yeah, never.
Must be a terrible Grand Lecturer, sorry.
Yeah, well, that's like a pilot, you know, I mean, which I am. You know, I know how to land, and then you do a landing, and that kind of proves you don't know how to land, you know, so you have to make sure and be honest about it, you know, or people don't trust you. But I had too many friends of mine who were on the line just badger me, when are you running? When are you running? I'm like, I don't know. When are you running? And so I was lucky enough to get elected a couple years ago. And that's where I am now.
That's excellent.
And we're really fortunate in North Dakota, because the guys that we have on our line were all friends before we ever got elected to the line. So I've heard of some grand lines where some of the guys don't get along. I mean, they get along, you know, civilly, but they don't really spend time together and they don't mesh. And we're really fortunate because we all get together. So that, I think, is where, hopefully, in North Dakota, we excel at, you know, as we have some Grand Line officers that are really cohesive. So
that's terrific.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for taking some time to
thank you
chat with us. And
you know, I was getting nervous before this, and then I thought, hey, wait a minute, I got two brothers. They're not going to make me look bad, you know. Unless I was so bad, you really can't cut it together any other way.
I always tell that to new guys who are going to do their proficiency in Lodge, that mm-hmm. no one in this room is sitting there thinking, oh, I can't wait for him to screw this up.
Yeah.
Everyone is there to support you, and that's what this is all about, I guess.
And last word is, for me anyway, that's what we try to tell different lodges, because ritual for some lodges is really hard, you know, and we tell them, hey, you don't have to be perfect. You know, what a great place to screw up is with a bunch of guys, you know, and they're more than willing to help you, you know. So don't look at it as something to be nervous about. This isn't the school play where if you goof up, it's in front of all your friends and parents. I mean, this is the place to screw up and learn. and the place to feel comfortable.
Here, here.
Well said.
Well, thank you again for your time, worshipful sir. Right worshipful.
Thank you.
I'm sorry.
Right worshipful.
Right worshipful,
yeah,
sir.
Or just brothers, fine.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your time. We appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
So our final interview, three of the Conference of Grandmasters here in Seattle, we have are lucky enough to have a brother from the Dominican Republic. Sir, would you introduce yourself, please?
Yes, of course. Thank you very much. Good afternoon, brethren. My name is Omar Martinez. I'm actually the Grand Chancellor of Foreign Affairs of the Grand Lodge of Grand Dominican Republic. It's the only Grand Lodge recognized by UGLE, United Grand Lodge of England, and also recognized by this conference that I'm here right now. And also it's part of CMI, the Masonic International, and the rest of the regular bodies around the world. So we are the only unique regular in Dominican Republic. And actually, it's quite an experience for me because it's my first conference of the Grand Master of the North America, because I came here representing also my most worshipful Grand Master, Cesar Duran Pichardo, that is the actual Grand Master until the 2005. This is actually my introduction. I also kind of tell you that I'm a medical doctor as a profession. And currently I have an MPH and Master in Public Health, also a Master in Science in Health Management, and MBA in Project Manager, which is basically more like a consultant, not a clinician anymore. I used to practice primary care, pre-hospital medicine, but then after I moved to the desk doctor, if we can say like that. So I wanted to introduce myself like this, you know a little more my background, and also speak different languages. I speak English, French, Italian, Portuguese, Spanish, and a little German. So that's why I'm the chancellor. They put me in the chancellor because I can connect with the
And you do Freemason in your spare time.
No. I think that's resumed why I'm a Freemason. I think that all of this is because we are like that, you know. So we are like I said, you know, in Spanish we say pica piedra. No, it's like the Flintstone, because we do ourselves, you know. We try to build ourselves. We try to do better every day. So we have to, you know, to add more things to us.
Sure.
Yes.
Is this your first time at the Conference of Grandmasters, North America?
Yes, it's my first time, okay. Actually. My grandmaster came two years ago with my past grandmaster also, Osiris Ramon Blanco. Both of them were here in 2021 in Milwaukee, I think that was, Milwaukee. And then after they couldn't come the next year, and we wanted to come, but we couldn't. And then now, finally, we came this time. We hope that we can continue to come. You know, it depends of where it's going to, you know, because we are living in Dominican Republic. Sometimes it's a little farther for us to travel. So it's depend, you know.
Well, going from Dominican Republic to Milwaukee in February was probably quite of an experience. Have you been?
Yes, of course.
I grew up in Wisconsin, so I'm very familiar with February. Yeah.
Exactly.
It's not always a place you want to visit.
No. They told me that it was very cold, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. They told me. As you probably know, you know, Dominican Republic is an island in the Caribbean that shared territory with Haiti, because we are two separate countries. One is Spanish and another one is French, if we, in language, you know. And then we are very close to Puerto Rico. It's half an hour to travel by flight. So we are there, you know. So, but in terms of Freemasonry, my lodge is from 1858. So we have 165 years. So.
Wow, that's...
And most of our founding fathers were Masons. And, you know, even though that we were, you know, a Spanish colony before, most of the influence, like all the rest of the Latin American, were because of the French Revolution, you know. Then after that, they took all the ideals and principles for that stage. And most of their founding fathers from Latin America were Masons.
Where are your lodges founded? Where do you receive your charter from?
Yes, we have it in 1858. I think that it's the same like in like what happened with Haiti, that I think it was from the United Grand Lodge of England. If I'm not mistaken, if I'm not very correct, please forgive me because I have this accurate, but I think it was like that. In 1858, our first grandmaster was Tomas Bobadilla, that actually was the first president of the government in Dominican Republic in 1844. Before that, the Grand Lodge was created. He already have been a Mason because he was initiated in other lodges that exist in Dominican Republic, because this is very important. And the Grand Lodge of Haiti is from 1824, and our Grand Lodge is from 1858. Well, we, before the Dominican Republic were founded, Haiti was occupying the country, the territory, which actually all the lodges were Haitians. Wow. Our founding father belongs to one of the lodges that was Haitian. So then after when we split and we became one separate country, then we have our own lodge independent for with you know, our sovereignty and all independence and all that. But I think that that's basically the charter book came from there.
Do some of the lodges still speak French then, or are they all Spanish?
Well, in right now in Dominican Republic, no. But in Haiti, yes, of course. But no, in Dominican Republic, we have in the Grand Lodge of the Dominican Republic, Italian, English, and Spanish. Only that. We wanted to create one in French because I speak French, but we hasn't do it yet. But we are using our plans. But we have a Garibaldi Lodge also as well. I was one of the founding because I speak Italian as well. As I told you, very connected with the European world. So and we have that Garibaldi Lodge. Most of the time we go to the travel to the Gran Oriente d'Italia. That is actually in Europe when they have in their communication, annual communication in Rimini, Italia, in April. As you probably may know, both Grand Lodges from Italy are recognized also by UGLE, they share territory, they are regulars, and also recognized by this conference before that happened.
I think, wasn't Washington, didn't they receive our territorial charter in 1858? I think it is 1858.
That sounds familiar.
I think
that's something I should know.
I think it's right in that at the same time. Yeah. But we were Washington Territory and not Washington State at the time because we didn't become a state of Washington until 1889, correct?
I think so.
And so
I think 31 years.
I think it was 58, 1858 as well.
So that's very nice. So we have such a short common history.
That's great.
Yes.
What, being that your first experience, I don't want to put you on the spot too much, but is there anything at this particular conference that has stood out to you as important or interesting or something you may take back? I'm sure lots that you'll take back with you to share. Is there anything that you'd like to discuss?
Well, you know, beside of all the schedule, you know, and all the agenda that is normally in all the conference and all that, what I keep the most is the fraternity, because I met many brothers that I used to normally know him by Facebook because I have as a friend in Facebook, but then finally I met it here, which was strengthened more the bond in the fraternity relationship. So it's an opportunity to us to connect with the other Grand Lodges that still doesn't know or probably that we exist there in the Caribbean, and they are amazed that we have 165 years. And so I think that this is one of the things that I keep the most. This, when we share, all the experience that we share here, that we have time to also to know the city as well. That is not only the conference. So we have time to chat, to strengthen, our communication. So I think this is one of the best things that this conference have as a plus to what they already offer. That is normal, the regular things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, excellent.
I was saying earlier to one of the interviews, it's like we're all the houses on the same block,
and
so it's good to know your neighbors and to be able to rely on them.
Exactly, especially because as I told you before, as a brother, once a brother, always a brother. It's amazing. Once a Mason, always a Mason. And for me, it's an honor, and a privilege to be here with all of you and to let you know that all the brethren here in the United States, it doesn't matter Seattle. In what part of the states, they are very welcome to you in the Dominican Republic. So when they are traveled there for vacation or whatever, they know now that they have another house there in the Grand Lodge of the Dominican Republic, which is good. You can call me or call, directly to the Grand Lodge, and definitely whatever assistance that you probably may need as a brother Mason, you probably have it over there.
Thank you. That's good to know.
Yes. We'll be close, but not quite in Dominican Republic next week. We're headed to the Bahamas on a cruise. But
Bahamas, yes, it's true. But it's important that all the brothers know that we are not alone.
Yes.
Doesn't matter where you go, you will find a lodge, and a lodge is your house. So you're never to be alone. A brother always, you will find a brother, and a brother in need, or will be helped.
Yeah. Well, I can't imagine.
Hmm? I was going to say, how did, if you wouldn't mind sharing, how did you become the Grand Chancellor?
Well, actually, this was like seven years ago. I was a past master for my lodge, And then the Grand Chancellor is not an elected position. It's an appointment position, right? You know that different Grand Lodges have different bylaws and standards. So we are constitutionally supported, appointed by the Grand Master and the Grand Council to put the position. So I actually am part of that position, as well as the president of the Commission of the Foreign Affairs International Relationship. And so I became like that, you know, the Grand Chancellor. Then I start as a new position to learn, you know, the way, start traveling with my Grandmaster at that moment around the world, masonry, in terms of masonry. I start knowing people, I start doing the job, and then, you know, I was suddenly that I like it because I know brethren, I speak their language, and which was fine, you know? And it's important because that position is the diplomatic position in masonry. So you have to travel, you're like some kind of ambassador, you have to connect with the people, you have to, you know, the recognition is also, the Grand Chancellor will normally do the work, the Treaty of Amity and Recognition, and the Treaty of Amity and Peace to the Grand Reps also is because of the Grand Chancellor that, you know, connect. If the Grand Lodge approaches to us, we see if they have a regularity of origins, how they receive their charter, how they were founded, and then after we move and see if they share a territory or if they are only exclusive territory, and then after we see if they respect on the landmarks. And also we have another criteria also to recognize the different Grand Lodges is the 8 point of regularity that normally UGLE has it, United Grand Lodge of England. So we are very, you know, careful what we recognize or not, but this is part of the job that the Grand Chancellor do, to advise in the Grand Commission of the recognition in the Grand Council of any Grand Lodges. We normally have, you know, our boys to let them know or warn them about any Grand Lodge. It's very interesting. It's a very quiet, interesting job and very difficult as well.
I can imagine. Yeah, I'd honestly never heard of a Grand Chancellor before this weekend, and I've gotten had the opportunity to talk to a couple, and it's
yeah, exactly, because it's a, you know, in different parts of the world, it's more like the Grand Secretary that do the work, that kind of thing. Grand Secretary of Foreign Affairs, or the Grand Secretary basically here, or the appointed position when you put it in different. Actually, in the United States, there is different stage that you have the Chancellor as an appointed position. But it's very important because sometimes if the Chancellor advises you wrong, then you can do harm, you know, and damage to the rest of the. But if the Chancellor advises you good, then you are, you know, strengthen your boundaries, strengthen your bounds fraternally with the rest of the Grand Lodges.
And so if I were to want to visit the Dominican Republic, I would contact my Grand Secretary, and you're the person he would interact with?
Exactly. You contact your Grand Secretary. Your Grand Secretary will let you know if he's good to visit or before, you know, us. Yes, okay, they are regular. It's fine. They will give you a good standing letter, and you have to go with your due cards. Good standing letter and due cards, you are set. It's your Masonic credential. Or you have a Masonic passport, it's fine, but it's better to do cards and a letter saying that you are, you know, what position do you have in your lodge, that you are good standing, and that you paid your dues. You know, because it's the procedure. And then after, they will contact us or they will inform us by email or telephone or WhatsApp, whatever the way that it has it. And then we're respecting you, so we let them know to the lodge, or we contact them after that directly to you and let you know, okay, you can come here, you meet us at the Grand Lodge, we directly to this lodge, you can visit, and, you know, whatever assistance that you probably may need.
Terrific.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't mind asking, how did you become a Mason? What's kind of your beginning stories?
Well, I was 33 years old at that time, so it's quite a number.
I was 38,
number.
So it's okay.
38, so 33. But for me, 33 is important because I will let you know why. Because I'm from July 77, 777. So, and my father was from the 1944, so he has 33 years old when I was born. And then, this is something that probably, you know, Masons will understand that, because so it's coincidence. And in 2010, when I have, you know, the opportunity to join, I was in Jamaica at that time, and I was supposedly to enter to, because I was medical director working for an Spanish company, international Spanish company in Jamaica. So I started knocking there for a district grand lodge dependent from the United Grand Lodge of England. And then after, they moved me on, my company, to my country. So I then became a Mason in my country. But it was like a quite an experience at that period of time. And I was, you know, very amazed. Probably what I would only know at that time is what you read in Dan Brown's book, the lost symbols of the angels and demons, and probably some things about Masonry, but not quite, it's not Masonry, you know. It's then after you know when you join. But that's what I only know about that. And then I only wanted to know to improve myself, to get better person, and everything, you know. And then when I know, can I go to my country, they tell me that this fraternity, actually what they do is that you get better, you know. You improve yourself, you through the symbols and teachings that we have. And then, you know, this suddenly keeping my attention, and then I enter. But sometimes I feel, and this is something very, you know, experienced, probably unique, that it's a call. Probably a call that sometimes we are not aware of, but sometimes in our life, it doesn't matter, 38, 33, you know, it doesn't matter. I put the number because it's a coincidence in my case. We have that call. We start knocking, we start looking, and, you know, I have, in the esoteric world, there is one lesson that's, a lesson or a quote said that when the student is ready, the master appears. So sometimes I think that what happened with Masonry, that sometimes we are in our journey, and we, as a young adult, we are not, probably not aware, and then suddenly a brother appears. And then all the things, the puzzle getting, you know, together, and then you jump, enter.
Absolutely.
And then after, what you have is, for me, is quite an experience. Without Freemasonry, I would be totally a different person. Because I think that all the tools that we know now have to apply it. If it wasn't for that, it would be totally different in my life. So I have only... I feel very grateful about becoming a Mason, to be honest with you. People, they don't understand, you know, they think that you are joined because you are part of the Illuminati, and that, you know, and then you want to rule the world, or you are going to become rich, you're popular. No, it doesn't work like that. Yeah. And we all know that. But people, you know, all these things that they see in the internet, they start, you know, they are very confused about reality, what is the fraternity, and what is basically what we have. The brotherly love, releasing truth, is basically one of the things that the most I enjoy, the brotherly love.
I think the brotherly love is probably the best note we could end this interview on. So
Thank you so much for taking the time.
Mm-hmm. And it was great talking to you, sir.
Really appreciate thank you for me to let me to talk. Thank you.
Thank you so much.